side. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a toy, can't just see, hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Here we go, folks. It is Thursday, January the 14th, 2021, and you are listening to today's Post-Impeachment Day midweek episode of The Ugly Truth. Welcome to the program, folks, and I hope all of you of goodwill are doing well. Yes, folks, it is Post-Impeachment Day, and actually, as much as this is a either a pleasant or an unpleasant surprise for all of you listening, some of you at least. We've actually been together 5 times now, folks. This is the 5th time that we have been together in less than 24 hours. I did 4 previous programs yesterday and didn't like them and trashed them. Decided that I was just going to wait until today and start over again. I was dealing with too much nervous energy as a result of yesterday's events, and just like anything else, oftentimes in order to get all of the right flavors out of something, it needs to cook a little bit longer. And so I decided to just go ahead and wait until some of these thoughts that were still in the embryonic stage had time to fully gestate, and so that we could have a more productive discussion today. Just a little bit of housekeeping, folks. Just really quickly, a thank you to those of you out there who have sent some very kind and complimentary commentary on the quality, listen to that alliteration, on the quality of the programs that I have been putting together. You know, I don't consider myself a professional, folks. I don't consider myself an investigative journalist or a professional commentator. Mike Piper, our dear friend Mike Piper, used to squirm somewhat uncomfortably when people would shower him with what I felt and still do feel are the very well-deserved accolades for his ability. And he used to chafe, I guess, or squirm a little bit. And he would say, "I'm just a hack writer with opinions." That's how he would describe himself. Even though, you know, Mike, He uncovered things that, well, literally no one else has, folks. I mean, let's face it, Mike is the one who effectively has, at least to my in my estimation, has put the pieces of the puzzle concerning the assassination of John F. Kennedy together in the way that is the most credible and makes the most sense. But nevertheless, he used to refer to himself as just a hack writer with opinions. And I more or less see myself the same way also. I don't consider myself a professional in that sense, even though I try to maintain some degree of professionalism in doing this. But it is more not necessarily due to my love of the craft as it is the fact that I am very agenda-oriented, and my agenda in this regard is to win. And the reason why my agenda in this is to win is because I understand that second place means death, okay? We have people who are driven by an ideology who are absolutely 666% devoted to our destruction. And, you know, in the end, folks, they may very well succeed in doing that. But as far as I'm concerned, I will be able to take some comfort in the fact that during this period where, you know, the opportunity arose, the obligation arose to resist these people and to fight against them, that as far as it was within my capacity to do so, I didn't fight stupidly. I made sure that every shot count, every time I pulled the trigger, that I hit my target to the best of my ability and not just wounding them in their pinky toe. And I guess this is the reason why, folks, I have very, very little patience for people who are sloppy in that regard. Because, you know, we need to stop seeing this as a contest and start seeing it as a war for survival, a war, you know, where life and death are on the table here. And unfortunately, there are far too many people amongst us in the quote-unquote woke movement. Notice I didn't use the previous term, folks, okay? Woke is better because, you know, the one thing that seems to characterize most of the people who are involved in this little endeavor is that they claim to be, while everybody else around them lives their lives with their heads in the sand, that they are woke. They're up and they're looking around and they see everything that's going on. And unfortunately, these same people, folks, they come up with stuff that's just completely off the map in terms of being on point. And it's caused us, it has cost us a lot of victories, and it has caused us a lot of defeats. So, nevertheless, bringing this thing full circle, as our good friend Mike Piper used to say, thank you for the very kind comments. They really do mean a lot to me. I'm glad to hear that somebody out there, that they are benefiting from the smorgasbord, the smorgasbord that we are serving up, and that it enriches their thinking and their ability to better understand the nature of the complex, complicated, and oftentimes downright convoluted world that we're living in right now. So, folks, obviously the big news is that the president, Donald J. Trump, has been impeached again. And actually, we're not going to talk a whole lot about that, folks, because there's, believe it or not, there's an actually a bigger story involved in it, a much more important story, that unfortunately hasn't gotten really any play whatsoever. And I'm going to save that discussion here for just a little bit. I want to touch on a few things. So, you know, we are here again together today. I've been ending each of the programs by saying I hope we can be together 3 or 4 days from now, because I suspect that there is going to be some disruption that it may, in fact, prevent us from being able to get together. And by the way, folks, since I hate to divert our discussion here, but it is an absolutely gorgeous day today, and that's good for all of you as well, irrespective of where you live, because what that means is we're going to have a shorter program today, and the reason why we're going to have a shorter program is because I'm going to get out there in this beautiful weather, and I'm going to dig some dirt, and I'm going to chop some trees and haul them with my tractor and do all the stuff that that I love to do here on the farm. So I'm going to be as succinct as possible in today's discussion, try not to drone on too much, because I really want to get out there in this beautiful weather and do some work with Mother Earth. And so anyway, let's see. Okay, so first of all, I think the thing that I'm going to touch on is, as I've promised, is just a quick little reminder of the importance of the opening words from our commentator, Douglas Rushkoff. I promised that I would do this because new people are coming and going all the time for the program, and so I want them to understand, in case they're coming to this program, you know, 4, 5, 6 episodes late, the significance of that little soundbite. And again, folks, we have to pay very close attention to what is being said. And for those of you who have already heard this this routine before, please bear with me. It's for the benefit of the newcomers here. That statement on the part of Douglas Rushkoff, he is a he is someone of the Hebraic persuasion. And please, no emails from people trying to school me on, you know, the difference between the Hebrews and the Israelites and the Jews and the Khazars and all of the rest of that stuff. As far as I'm concerned, in terms of the discussion that we're having, all of these things are somewhat irrelevant. Okay, they're just different words used to describe the same thing. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who fall into this trap of utilizing these what appear to be these differences just because the different letters are used and they're arranged in different ways, that somehow that this signifies a completely different set of circumstances, and it really isn't the case at all. Okay. Anyway, our writer here, commentator Douglas Rushkoff of the Hebraic persuasion, he says something that really, if the world paid better attention to this one little 1 minute soundbite, if the world paid better attention to it and understood it for the far-reaching and I would say perilous, even apocalyptic implications that are associated with it, it would be a much different world than it is right now. Much different. Okay. And of course, what he's talking about is the religion, the mindset, the philosophy, the worldview that he follows and that those of his similar pedigree follow. And notice again the language that he uses, folks. He says, what makes Judaism so dangerous to everyone, to every race, to every nation, to every people, is that we smash things that aren't true. Now, this is important, folks, because first of all, he says, what makes Judaism so dangerous? Okay, actually, yeah, what makes Judaism so dangerous? So he isolates what it is, what the subject of the sentence is, which is Judaism. It's not Zionism. It's not Luciferianism. It's not Bilderbergism, Illuminatiism, or any of the other things that are thrown out there in this discussion that is had these days. He says it is Judaism. And you look at the adjective that he uses in describing Judaism, and he says what makes it dangerous. Okay, so not challenging, not confrontational. He says dangerous, as in poison is dangerous, and a bomb is dangerous. Okay, a hammer to the back of the head is dangerous. A bullet to the heart is dangerous. You see, we're talking, we have to listen to the words that they themselves are using. Now, there's really nothing novel or new about what Rushkoff is saying, okay? These things have been said throughout history ever since Judaism first made its appearance in the history of human affairs, okay? And I point this out both on the website and on the program here from time to time, that the issue of Judaism, it was settled as far as it being either a helpful thing to mankind or a harmful thing to mankind, literally within the very first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. Because here we have the story of Abram, who would later change his name. Isn't it funny how they do that, folks? How he would change his name later to Abraham. And we have the story of him leaving his homeland and going to Egypt. And before going into Egypt, he comes up with this little arrangement with his wife, Sarah, where basically the two of them conspire, collude with each other to pull a fast one on Pharaoh, right? The most powerful, the most wealthy man in the kingdom, that they're going to pose as brother and sister rather than as husband and wife. And Abram, later to change his name to Abraham, you know, he says, I need you to do this for me so that I will be well treated. Okay, when the Egyptians, when Pharaoh's men see how beautiful you are, they're going to want to have you. So for my sake, tell them you're my sister. So then, indeed, as the, and folks, I don't know if any of this actually happened. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we have a group of people who have based their activities, their identity, their whole worldview on the notion that this did happen. And this isn't one of these like Grimm's brother fairy tales where, like the boy, I think the boy who cried wolf was a, I think that was one of the Grimm brothers fairy tales, you know, where there was a moral to the story and where somewhere along the line, usually at the end, the bad guy met his just rewards for it. Well, this doesn't happen in this story where Abram has sold Sarah into sexual slavery to Pharaoh. Pharaoh finds out that Abram and Sarah pulled a fast one on him. Doesn't say exactly how he figured it out, other than a certain sickness suddenly swept through the palace after Pharaoh took Sarah into his household. I don't think that we all need degrees in biology or human physiology to figure out what that probably was. And the Pharaoh reacts very angrily to Abram, and he says, "You know, why have you dealt with me so treacherously? You told me she was your sister instead of your wife. Now take your wife and your possessions and get out of my country." And then it says, Pharaoh sent his men with Abraham, meaning his soldiers, his palace guards, whatever, to make sure that Abram and Sarah left the country, right? The first pogrom, the first expulsion, the first act of quote-unquote anti-Semitism. And then it says, if you read just a few sentences later, that as they're about to go into the next kingdom, Abram sits Sarah off to the side and says, "Now listen." And he basically tells her that they're going to do the same thing. Okay. So getting back to Rushkoff, he's absolutely right. He's telling the truth that Judaism is a dangerous thing. And this story, by the way, folks, this is just one of a thousand stories within this collection of books known as the Old Testament, the Torah, whatever you want to call it, of similar things where bad people engaged in bad things and they were rewarded for it, okay? And this ideology has carried itself forward, obviously, to the modern day. So whether or not they call themselves Hebrews or Israelites or Judites, Judeans, whatever, it's the same ideology. It's the same ideology. Now I have to point this out because I'm constantly getting emails from people who, you know, are trying to school me on how wrong I am on this issue, that I'm not reading it with the correct perspective, you know, that that these are fake Jews and they're not real Jews today, the people that we're dealing with today. And, it's on some instances, it's slightly amusing. Most of the time, however, folks, to be quite honest, it's maddening. It's maddening to watch a human being who chooses to abandon common sense and reasoning in favor of whatever salve they get, the emotional salve they get by believing in fairy tales, believing in things that just simply don't withstand the rigors of common sense and reason. Okay. And all of this rooted not, again, as I said, not in fact and science and common sense, but rather in whatever emotionalism happens to be guiding them at this moment. And this is how we have gotten to this point now, where this very dangerous thing is smashing our world. You know, as Rushkoff said, we smash things that aren't true. Now think about that, folks, okay? Let's say you buy a pair of shoes, and it's time to, we won't use that example. You don't have to smash things to replace them with something better, okay? But that's what they do, okay? It is an ideology that is rooted in violence, doing violence to things that run contrary to what they believe. Now, this is important here, too. I was having a conversation with my good buddy Paulie from Alaska the other day, and we were talking about this. And we were talking about Rushkoff in this particular statement that he made. And I said, you know, besides the thing itself, I'm talking very frankly about the fact that, yes, the ideology of the Jews, their Judaism, is dangerous, and that it is dangerous to everyone, okay, and that they smash things, you know, they destroy things that happens to run counter to whatever it is that they believe, you know, that they're not a live and let live group of people. What makes the rest of it so profound is, number one, we have to remember here some of the math that's involved in this little exercise. They represent, at best, 1% of the world's population. 1%. So the 1%, by his admission, is engaged in destroying the world of the rest of the 99%. So, you know, imagine we live in a little neighborhood here, and there's 100 homes in this neighborhood, 100 families. And there's one house in the neighborhood where they go around and they destroy the things belonging to the other 99 that they don't like. They don't like the color of your house, so they burn it down. They don't like the shape of, you know, the pitch of your roof is not steep enough, so they plant dynamite in it and they blow it up. They don't like the type of grass you have planted in, you know, one yard, and so they bulldoze everything down. This is the ideology that drives these people and which has always driven them. This is important. You know, it is a commonly held, but I would say highly inaccurate and unsupportable position on the part of certain varieties of people who call themselves Christians, that the Jews became an accursed people the moment that they rejected Jesus Christ. Well, I would say that this is putting the cart before the horse thing, because the real question that has to be asked and discussed and answered is, why did they reject Jesus Christ? What was it about Jesus Christ and the message that he was bringing to them that they reacted to it in the volcanic and allergic way that they did? Okay. That's the real question that needs to be asked and answered. And I would say that not just history and their own statements, but anybody who approaches the Old Testament, you know, the book of the Jews, with the same type of methodical scientific method that we approach other topics that require study, meaning we're going to use reason and facts rather than emotionalism and superstition and things like that. I think that an honest appraisal after reading their literature causes an honest person to say, well, of course they rejected Jesus Christ. What he brought was in complete 180 degrees the opposite direction of what had been given to them by Moses and all of the other patriarchs. Anyway, let me just finish up this thing with Rushkoff, folks, because like I said, I'm looking at that beautiful blue sky out there and the sun, and I am really looking forward to getting to work here, doing some agricultural activity. Okay. So Rushkoff is saying in this that the 1%, it's actually less than that, folks. It's probably closer to not 1 out of 100, but maybe 1 out of 200. Okay. That they are engaged, in a seek and destroy mission of the rest of the 99. Okay. The rest of the 99. And not only that, folks, but, you know, what makes Rushkoff's statement also very profound and very disturbing is the way that he is delivering it. You know, he's not snarling when he says these things. He's not growling. He's saying this this harmless individual, you know, there are no fangs, there's no smoke coming out of his ears or fire coming out of his mouth. And this is the other thing that makes them so dangerous, using his words, is their ability to hypnotize us into thinking that they don't pose a clear and present danger to our well-being. And this is why it is so important, you know, that they have control of the media. You know, I said years ago, and I still maintain, that in the aftermath of 9/11, the Israeli-engineered terrorist attacks that kicked off the war on terror, that out of all of the media programming out there, okay, that finally convinced the American people to go and to participate in what was this giant black mass organized around this human sacrifice of millions of innocent people. You know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, the various people who speak on the political talk programs, and, you know, it wasn't, you know what I'm talking about. The most dangerous piece of programming out there that helped bring about this horrible thing, the effects of which we're dealing with today, literally 24 hours after the second impeachment of Donald Trump, the most dangerous piece of propaganda was Seinfeld, right? Seinfeld. So, you know, were they on Seinfeld? Were they saying, you know, psst, 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 we got to go invade Iraq and kill a bunch of people, and we're going to do that as the opening stage of this giant bloodbath that's going to include Syria, it's going to include Iran, it's going to include the entire Middle East, because we Jews have been promised all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers, and it's right there in the Old Testament, appears many, many times. No, they didn't do that. They got on there, and besides the usual business of acting as that corrosive force on the moral quality of what is for the most part a Christian-oriented country, the United States, you know, with people hopping in and out of bed, with people, casual sex, and there was one episode I think I happened to come upon where Elaine is talking, you know, in typical Jewish woman business about her right to murder the children in her womb and all the rest of that. No, they didn't go into, you know, besides acting as that corrosive force on the moral compass of America, and which, unfortunately, you know, Americans just lapped it up. But the most damaging thing that came out of that program is that Jews were portrayed as funny, entertaining, and harmless, so that when discussions would take place, for example, involving the five Israeli intelligence officers who were arrested on 9/11 after they had been seen cheering and celebrating and filming the towers coming down, that in the mind of whatever American happened to run into this hard evidence of at least foreknowledge on the part of Israel, you know, they said, well, you know, I've been watching Seinfeld for 10 years, and, you know, they're all Jewish on there, and they deal with really Jewy issues and all the rest of that. Jerry Seinfeld didn't have anything to do with 9/11, and Elaine, and Kramer, and George, and all whoever else is on there. And this is the thing that makes them so dangerous, folks. You know, again, going back to what Rushkoff says, what makes them so dangerous is that applying, you know, the motto of Mossad, by way of deception, we shall make war. You know, at times the fangs do come out when they're talking about destroying Iraq, when they're talking about destroying Syria, when they're talking about destroying Iran, okay? And then at other times they fold their fangs in, just like a viper can do. Okay, if you vipers, and by the way, folks, you know, I specifically use that comparison because that's what Jesus called them. He said that they were a brood of vipers, and if you study, you know, the way that a viper, which includes like rattlesnakes and things like that, the way that their teeth work is that they fold back. And the teeth only come out, they've got special muscles that pull them out when they're ready to strike, okay, so that the teeth, they'll sink into the flesh of whoever the intended victim is. But this is what they do. There are times when they keep their teeth folded back, like on Seinfeld, and then there are times when the fangs come out, such as when they're advocating that we, the Gentile world, go to war and destroy a group of people who they don't like and whose country has to be smashed, okay, because it happens to believe in things that they consider to be not true. So anyway, folks, those were the thoughts on Douglas Rushkoff. I realize, wow, 29, almost 30 minutes into that. Okay, so folks, we're going to jump into the real meat of discussion here. First of all, those of you who are wondering what may be coming next, okay, and whether or not my predictions have changed about anything. No, they haven't, folks. I still maintain that that Donald Trump, President Trump, is going to do something. He's going to do something big. It's going to be very disruptive. Now, whether or not he does it within the next 6 days or not, I don't know. Okay, we may not see anything for 6 weeks. We may not see anything for 6 months. Okay, we need to prepare ourselves for the possibility that part of his strategy, part of his calculus here, is to let this thing play out. You know, if we examine what has happened in the last year, this has been precisely what he has done. He allowed the riots to take place in order for people to see the nature of the problem, the threat that we faced. Okay, he could have, any time he wanted, he could have sent in the troops and put down those riots, but he needed to let the American people see it. And you know, this is the sermon I've been giving my older children, you know, over the course of the last week or so, or longer, you know, who are understandably very upset over what is happening. And they want the president to just do it. They want him to pull the trigger now. And I've been explaining to them, I've been saying, well, I agree, I would love to see it now too. But this is not a game of checkers, it's a game of chess. And it's not just any game of chess. It is a very complex and complicated one. And it is also a military operation, and it's also a criminal prosecution, okay? And anybody who has ever, you know, watched a police show or whatever knows that when the police are investigating a particular criminal or a particular criminal activity that is supposed to take place, that they have to wait until the criminal act is a completed act. Okay, you've got your drug dealer, and you've got your buyer. Okay, and they are supposed to meet at a certain place at a certain time, and the police are there, you know, hiding in the bushes or, you know, whatever, with their binoculars and their listening devices and whatever, and they don't swoop in until the money and the drugs have changed hands, because then it is a completed criminal act. Now, it may very well be that what the president is planning to do is to wait until Inauguration Day, when Biden shows up, puts his hand on the Bible, and raises his other hand, and he takes the oath of office, at which point not only Biden's participation in this huge criminal conspiracy is a fait accompli, it's done deal, but as well everybody who helped him. Okay. Keep in mind as well that the impeachment vote that took place yesterday, that there were several Republicans who went along with it. Okay. And the president needs to make the American people understand that the danger to their well-being is not just with one party. You know, let's face it, as dangerous as the Democrats are, okay, there are Republicans who are even more dangerous, because they operate under the cloak of friendship and of solidarity. Okay. Now, I don't know exactly what the president is planning to do. All I know for sure is that he's not going to do nothing. He's not. He's not going to sit there and let this torpedo hit the ship of state and send this thing to the bottom of the ocean. He's not going to allow that to happen. And if that means in order to accomplish this, he has to allow the enemy to make significant gains, such as Biden being taking the oath of office. For all we know, folks, for all we know, and this is what I was explaining to my beautiful daughter this morning, for all we know, the Supreme Court, the big news that they had tossed out the various court cases that were brought to them dealing with election fraud, maybe that was in and of itself just a ruse. We know now, especially after 9/11, that all sorts of courts were created after that, secret courts that the public knows nothing about. Okay, for all we know, the president has utilized the authority that was created by the Patriot Act to do exactly that, to hold court cases dealing with the election and other things that the public simply doesn't know anything about. Now, I don't know whether or not the Supreme Court can be brought into something like that. Obviously there would be some legal problems given the fact that there are members of the court who are hostile to the president, you know, the Democrats, those who were appointed by Obama. But I just don't know, you know. But it's worth asking the question. It's worth asking the question, what if? Okay, because when you ask that question, all of a sudden now, you haven't painted yourself into a corner, okay, where it can only be one thing or the other. And like I said, whatever it is that the president has planned, and we can rest assured that he has something planned, okay, it's going to be big and it's going to be disruptive. But it's something that simply has to take place if we stand any chance. And when I say we, folks, I mean as in 7 billion people around the world, because this corrosive force, this that is dangerous to everyone, that means everybody, folks, not just 330 million Americans, but 7 billion people, okay? So the president is not going to sit back and watch this world go up in flames. And that's why I am confident that he's going to do something. Now, something that I meant to bring up on the previous program and forgot, it's another what if, folks. You know, the news is that there are 15,000 National Guardsmen in Washington, D.C. And all of this has been predicated on the intelligence reports that indicate that there's going to be armed right-wing uprisings that could threaten the quote-unquote president-elect Biden. And therefore, in the interest of not having a repeat of what happened last week, there are 15,000 armed troops that they say are with the National Guard. But what if they're not with the National Guard, folks? What if they're not? Or what if the troops themselves, the grunts and the non-commissioned officers, the enlisted people, what if they're National Guard, but what if their commanders aren't? Now, I bring this up because of a very interesting conversation I was having with a good friend of mine about a week ago that I meant to bring up on one of the previous programs, and as usual, it slipped my mind. You know, we have a new branch of the military, folks, that Trump, President Trump, I apologize, Mr. President, in the unlikely event that you're listening to this program, please do not mistake me referring only to you, your last name, in any way disrespectful, because I hold you in very high respect. We know that the president has created an entirely new branch of the military, the Space Force, okay? Now, I remember at the time when he introduced this and when he announced it, I thought to myself, well, that is really silly. You know, I mean, what are we going to be doing, hunting down E.T., you know? And I just thought to myself, that's very odd. But now I'm coming to see that maybe there's something else involved in this than simply, you know, the USS Enterprise and, you know, the Death Star and all the rest of that. Maybe it's his private army, folks, that he needs in order to do what he needs to do, beginning with next week's inauguration. We know that the U.S. military, at least within those sections of it where you have, you know, high-ranking commanding officers, is thoroughly infected with as part of the deep state. Okay, we have seen plenty of examples of this with Vindman, the lieutenant colonel whose testimony was used in the first impeachment trial against the president. Vindman, by the way, folks, of the very non-Gentile persuasion. So what if this Space Force, it doesn't have anything to do with the USS Enterprise or with Luke Skywalker or anything like that. What if it's just his own private army that he plans to utilize for the prosecution of this operation to save America from what our enemies have planned for us? You know, it could just be very much be just that he has worked with well-placed people, including General Flynn and others who know who the rats are in the military. Making a list, checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Okay, and that what the president has done is to separate those commanders from all four branches, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and SEALs, who he knows are loyal to the country, loyal to the Constitution, loyal to the law, and loyal to him. And now he has created his own Praetorian Guard, who can be counted on to do whatever is necessary with what he plans beginning this coming next week with the inauguration. Yeah, maybe those 15,000 Guard troops, maybe they are just regular National Guard, but maybe they are going to be commanded by people who are loyal to the president and who have been assembled and created under the auspices of the Space Force. That's just a what if, folks. I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm saying what if. Okay. Now, very quickly here, folks, we're already at 42 minutes. My goodness, time is flying by and the sun is shining, and I really got to get out there with my shovel and my chainsaw and my tractor and all the rest of this stuff. So the big news yesterday was the second impeachment of the president. All of the Jewish groups, of course, are just cheering, you know, that Pharaoh is being brought low and all of the rest of the stuff. You know, I really encourage folks, read the website. You know, I get people now calling me and contacting me I haven't heard from in 10 years and whatever, and they're saying, what do you think this is all about? Where's it going to go? And I just tell them, read the articles on the website. Well, yeah, but what about this? Read the articles. Well, what about just read the articles, you see? Because everything we really need to know about the nuts and bolts of this thing, whether it's the impeachment, really what it is over the last 5 years, it can be explained with three numbers and with seven words. Everything that we need to know about it. Okay, the three numbers are 9-1-1, and the seven words are American Foreign Policy in the Middle East. That is what this is all about. And on that note, folks, I just want to, and this is one of the things that I have been saying to these various people, friends and family members who I'm hearing from, you know, after many years, and they're saying, well, you know, what is this? I'm so angry with Pelosi, and I'm so angry with all these people, what they're doing. And I point out to them, much to their much to their initial disagreement and displeasure, that they helped bring this about. And I tell them, I say, the reason that this is all going on is because of three numbers, 911, and seven words, American foreign policy in the Middle East. And then I remind them, I say, do you remember the long, sometimes heated conversations and discussions and debates and disagreements that we had after 9/11, where I was warning you not to fall into this pit that had been dug for you, that this was a deliberately contrived act of terrorism, but it wasn't it wasn't on the part of the Muslims, wasn't on the part of Islam. Remember me telling you that at the end of this thing, the people who pulled this off, who really do hate us for our freedom, okay, that when they got done doing with us what they planned to do, that you were going to look back on this and you were going to regret the day that you bit down on that hook. And I tell them, I say, what I've been saying is they are going after the president because he plans to undo those foreign policy decisions, namely war, that were initiated immediately following 9/11. You helped bring this about with parroting all this silly nonsense about how the Muslims hate us for our freedom and they want to force Islam, you know, take over the world. You bought into all of those lies that were put out by the Jewish mainstream media. You helped bring this about. Well, you know, in a larger sense, folks, it's not just, you know, the people that we have known, you know, over the last 20 years who have done this, but our, you know, the right wing, even Trump supporters today, you know, they find themselves enraged over the fact that they've lost control over their political system, that, you know, the president that they've been waiting for all their lives now is being run through the political meat grinder. But they helped create this monster that's devouring, folks. They helped create it. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, all these people who were saying we got to go into Iraq and make them pay for 9/11, even though Iraq had nothing to do with it. And even to this day, folks, even to this day, they won't tell the American people the who, what, where, when, why, and how of why their president is being devoured and destroyed. It's not Nancy Pelosi, folks. Nancy Pelosi follows orders. Who's giving her the orders? It's not Gerald Nadler. Gerald Nadler takes orders. He doesn't give orders. It's not Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff takes orders. He doesn't give orders. Who gives orders, folks? Benjamin Netanyahu is who gives orders. And his gang of spies and assets in this country, such as Bill Kristol, David Froom, Jennifer Rubin, Elliot Cohen, Max Boot, the whole gang of neocons who seduced the American people into buying into the lies about Islam and how war against the Islamic world was going to be a glorious thing. It was going to make America great again after 9/11. And on that note, folks, we're going to discuss a story that's even more important than the events that took place yesterday with the president's impeachment, because that impeachment was only made possible as a result of the Israeli lobby offering to buy votes from those Republicans who otherwise would have voted against the impeachment. And I'm talking about Bill Kristol. Now, this is the story. This should have been the lead story yesterday on Limbaugh's program. It should have been the lead story on Hannity's program. It should have been the lead story discussion topic on Tucker Carlson's program. It should have been the lead story and topic of discussion everywhere throughout the alternative media, including those Middle Eastern outlets that I at one time worked very closely with Press TV and all the others. It should have been the lead story, folks. And to the best of my knowledge, I haven't spent, you know, a whole lot of time investigating it. But as of this moment, there is only one place that I know of, and I hope I'm wrong. I honestly hope I'm wrong, folks. There's only one place where it has gotten some of the attention that it deserves, and it's been on the Ugly Truth website. And what is that story? The story is that Bill Kristol and the same gang who brought us the war on terror in order to destroy Iraq and to get this clash of civilizations going, the same group of people, Bill Kristol and the neoconservatives who have maneuvered and worked against Donald Trump, who brought about the first impeachment, who brought about everything that's been going on. And remember, folks, they're not order givers either, Kristol and the others. They're order takers. Who's giving them their orders, folks? Bill Kristol and the rest of those slimy, smarmy, seditious individuals, they work for Benjamin Netanyahu. So, that same group of people, the day before they're going to have this vote on Trump, President Trump's second impeachment, they announce that they are amassing a war chest of $50 million for any Republican who decides to vote for the president's impeachment, that they will be able to tap into that money in order to get themselves, you know, reelected when election season rolls around in another 2 years. Now, folks, let's play what if again. What if instead of Bill Kristol and the rest of these creatures of the night who work directly for Netanyahu and for Israeli intelligence, what if instead of them it had been a group of a Muslim group? What if it had been CARE? What if the Council on American Islamic Relations, and folks, I have no regard for CARE whatsoever. Okay, so, I mean, they have basically crawled into bed with organized Jewish groups and have been out front and center in adding to the to all of the political instability as much as they're able to do it. I mean, the Islamic community in America at best numbers about 6 or 7 million. Okay, and let's face it, you know, the Christian evangelicals who make up the largest base of voters in the country, I don't think that they're spending a lot of time on CARE's website or any other Islamic group for that matter. Okay, but what if instead of Kristol and his group raising $50 million for those Republicans who vote for the president's impeachment, what if it was an Islamic group? What if it was CARE? What if it was, I don't know what some of these others, what if it was the Iranians? What if the Iranians were paying a bounty to those Republicans who voted for Trump's impeachment? It would be front page news all over the place. It would be the topic of discussion on Limbaugh, on Hannity, on Tucker Carlson, all of it. But when Bill Kristol and the Jews, the Jewish lobby, do this, it doesn't get any discussion. And yet right there, folks, you can see what the whole Get Trump agenda has been about for the last 5 years. It has been Kristol and that gang of neoconservatives who need Trump, President Trump, out of office before he can finish his plans for disentangling the United States from this deadly relationship it has with the Jewish state. That was the real story yesterday, folks, was how Israel, through the agency and the persons of Bill Kristol and the rest of them, were buying off members of Congress, paying for their impeachment votes. Where do you think that $50 million is going to come from, folks? It's going to come from Israel. Now, the reason I bring this up is that, again, this is another example of what we have covered on this program as of late, the topic of missed opportunities. Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these guys, and look, I applaud the fact that they have defended the president as well as they have. But they have to understand is that the monster that they have spent the last 5 years of their career, the monster that that they have been helping the president fight, is a monster that they helped. If they didn't create it, they certainly protected it. They protected it and they nurtured it during that period immediately following 9/11. All the information was there. You didn't have to have a degree in criminal justice. You didn't have to have a degree, a background in intelligence. All the information was there as to who they are, who they were, what they stand for, what their racket is, and what they intend to do. And yet these people wouldn't touch this topic with a 10-foot pole. And now what has happened is that it has become this monster. You know, the vultures have come home to roost, or to feast, I guess is probably a better way of putting it. And unfortunately, folks, you know, this, we would be remiss if we ended out today's program without bringing this thing closer to home. You know, there were prominent people within our own movement, folks, our own 9/11 truth movement, prominent people, okay, on websites, they publish newsletters, they get on, the radio and all the rest of that, and these people were saying 2 years ago, 3 years ago, President Trump should be impeached. Well, congratulations, those of you out there who said that. You just got your wish twice. He was impeached twice. Okay. And all of these people and websites, folks, who have now jumped on the bandwagon of saying, you know, that the organized Jewry is the one responsible for stealing the election from Trump. Well, where were you 4 years ago? All of the signs were there. They were there 4 years ago. And now you're hoping that people are going to forget, about the fact that for 4 years you have stood alongside people such as Bill Kristol and Jennifer Rubin and added your own voice to theirs in what was a Zionist plot at regime change in America. And I only bring this up, folks, because I get emails from people and they send me articles. And, you know, I'm on their lists of, you know, their email list that they blast out to however many people get it. And these are articles coming from all the old hangouts, okay? All the old hangouts. And all of these same people who for years have been saying, oh, Trump is going to start World War III. He's, you know, he's Netanyahu's boy toy, and he's going to do this, and he's going to do that. And now it's a complete change-a-roo, a complete reversal. Okay, it's too late for that. And the reason I say this, folks, is, first of all, I'm asking anybody out there listening who does send me articles from these various individuals, please don't. That's number one. Please don't send them to me. And also, too, for your own benefit, please don't read them. Don't pay any attention to what these guys, if these guys were investors, or if they were investment advisors, you know, they would have had you investing in things that were absolute losing stocks and you would have lost everything. If they were accountants, you'd be fighting in front of a jury right now for your freedom for tax evasion. Do not subject yourself anymore to the bad math that these characters have unfortunately cranked out for the last 4 years with regards to President Trump. Okay. They helped bring us to this point right now. And with whatever comes our way, which I can promise you folks is not going to be pretty, it's not going to be pleasant. But I can tell you what is pretty and pleasant, folks. Right now, in North Idaho, the weather is gorgeous, the sun is shining, it's Mr. Blue Sky is out today, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a wonderful time with Mr. Blue Sky. I'm going to be digging trenches in order to drain fields that are flooding, and I'm going to chop trees down, and I'm going to haul them with my tractor, and I'm going to do my best in that regard to make America great again, at least my tiny slice of it here in North Idaho. So anyway, folks, that's it for today. We shall see what transpires in the next couple of days and whether or not we will be getting together again. As I said, everything is a question mark. We don't know what's coming next, and it is entirely possible that you know, this system that we utilize now for our ability to communicate will come crashing down. It's entirely possible. So if that is the case, then, you know, it's been fun. As my one friend said, it's been nice knowing you. So that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, stay safe, stay sharp, and keep the faith.